You're listening to The Pulse on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. This is your independent daily news show reporting from the front lines of our community. I'm your host, James Mingy. For months, a tent encampment had been occupying several blocks of Hastings on either side of Main Street. With nowhere else to go, the unhoused of the downtown east side had established its own community. The documentary feature, Love in the Time of Fentanyl, made its debut at the 2022 Doxa Film Festival. In it, director Colin Lasky chronicles the Overdose Prevention Society as they work to save the lives of the residents of the downtown east side. The film will be shown at the Cinematheque on Wednesday, June 14th. The screening will include a live question and answer session. A few days ago, I had an opportunity to talk with the director of Love in the Time of Fentanyl, Colin Lasky, from his home in New York City. And one further note, the Overdose Prevention Society does have a relationship with Vancouver Cooperative Radio. The Society produces a show, OPS Radio, which airs on Monday evenings at 8 p.m. Hello, Colin Lasky, and welcome to The Pulse.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, Love in the Time of Fentanyl, I know that's it's been around. I think it made its debut last year at the Doxa Festival here in Vancouver. But if we could go back a little bit further, and can you tell us how this project originally started?
Yeah, for sure. So I worked in the downtown east side for many years before moving to New York in 2016. You know, that was right around the time that kind of fentanyl had taken over the drug supply. So my wife also worked in the neighborhood where, you know, getting calls almost weekly at some points, hearing about people that, you know, we'd known that were passing away, and knowing the friends that were working in the neighborhood that we're just going through hell. And I remember watching the news at the time, and it really kind of focused on how hard this crisis was on the paramedics. You know, knowing that you know, the community members themselves were the kind of the first responders that were teaching themselves to use naloxone and reverse overdoses, and caring for their friends and loved ones weren't getting, I felt like, you know, a light shined on them. So that's what I really wanted to capture. And I didn't know, you know, what I was going to do. I was doing a few different projects at the time. And when I met Sarah, you know, I'd known her for many years from my previous time working there, and known lots of folks that work there, like Sarah and Ronnie and Norma. It just seemed like a real opportunity to really get what I was looking for. And I think that place really, you know, represented the neighborhood for me in a lot of ways. You know, it's a place filled with misfits and outcasts and beautiful people that were doing whatever it took to come together and to try and improve the lives of their loved ones. And you know, like, there obviously a lot of tragedy in the neighborhood outside of that space, but inside it's filled with a lot of love, and that's what I was hoping to capture.
And by Sarah, I'm guessing you mean Sarah Blythe, the woman who I think she founded and runs the Overdose Prevention Society. Is that right?
Yeah, I first met her, I think, in around 2011, and I was filming the street soccer team from the downtown east side that was going to Paris for the Homeless World Cup. And she was one of the volunteers that was helping bring the team over there. And, you know, we'd both worked for the same kind of organization, for the Portland Hotel Society at the time, in different capacities. So I'd known her well and had a lot of respect for her. And, you know, that was the beautiful thing, like, not, you know, hearing from a distance of what was happening in the neighborhood. It was really horrible and sad, but also just really inspiring and beautiful to see the lengths that you know, people were going to respond when really no one else outside of the community knew what to do.
Yeah, maybe it's worth reminding our listeners that I think 2016, the date you're referring to, that's when the overdose crisis was officially declared a health emergency by the province of British Columbia. So it's staggering to believe that it's been going on for 7 years, and I don't know, it just doesn't really seem to be getting any better, does it?
No, yeah. Yeah, it's I mean, I've been back to Vancouver like a few times a year, and it just seems like a real hopeless situation. and a frustrating situation. You know, I think like from when I started this, people in the community were really kind of screaming, you know, safe supply and different options that, you know, it's just, it's always a slow response when you have to, you know, deal with laws and bureaucracy and stuff. And that's what I think ops was such a beautiful example of, that sometimes you got to break the rules to save lives and do what's right. And I think the Downtown East Side has historically done that over and over again. And it's just sad that it takes so long to catch up for these innovations that come, you know, these grassroots innovations that come from those who are most affected by this crisis and have been for years, you know, laying the groundwork for kind of compassionate, evidence-based services in the neighborhood. It's just sad that it takes not only governments and policymakers, but I think like society in general, just to take so long for us to get over our comfort levels and come on board and understand all the things that we really need to do to help people.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the Overdose Prevention Society that's so prominent in your film?
Well, it you know, back when the crisis first hit and no one, as I was mentioning, kind of really knew what to do, you know, from you know, a leadership standpoint, from a governmental standpoint, from anyone outside of the community, the community members themselves, you know, came together and said, you know, we need to, you know, I should preface this by saying that there's a kind of like the history of Insight, you know, and the battle to open North America's first supervised injection site happened in the Downtown East Side. And that went all the way to the Supreme Court. And at the time, Stephen Harper's conservative government was trying to close it down. And obviously, Insight had, you know, a lot of peer-reviewed evidence that they came to court with, and the conservative government really couldn't say anything other than they didn't like it. So, despite it being a majority conservative bench, Insight won unanimous decision in the Supreme Court for the right to stay open. In reaction to that, Stephen Harper made it virtually impossible to open other sites and passed a bill that had all these kind of different regulations and things that had to go through for anyone else to open, and it was just basically virtually impossible. So that's why Insight remained one of the few in Canada. And when the crisis hit, no one really knew how to, you know, get enough to meet the demand of what was needed. And that's why Ops opened, and it started as a tent with Ann Livingston and Sarah Blythe and community members that said, here's a place to come use, and we can, you know, we have an oxygen tank, we have naloxone, and we'll take care of you. And that, you know, was, I think, soon after supported by the provincial government, and they were given brick and mortar space, which is the Overdose Prevention Society that we see in the film. And that model spread quickly throughout the neighborhood, throughout the province, and throughout Canada now, and now there's numerous, you know, kind of community involved overdose prevention spaces across this country that are saving, you know, countless lives. But I think like no one in these sites and in harm reduction has any illusions that this is going to, you know, end the overdose crisis. I think that these spaces are a place to save lives, and that's what they're meant to do, you know, but for us to really get out of this mess that we're in requires a lot more change, you know, and the willingness to do whatever it takes, and that hopefully is happens soon.
I know their purpose, well, you just mentioned it, is basically to save lives. My understanding is that Insight and OPS have been remarkably successful in saving lives. I think, if I'm correct, there's not been a single reported overdose death inside any of the overdose prevention or safe injection sites. Does that sound right?
Yeah, so they first began in Bern, Switzerland, in the late 80s, and so now they've been around close to 40 years, and there's over 100 sites worldwide, and no one has ever passed away from an overdose in one of these sites. And I think that, you know, that's the frustrating part, is that overdoses are preventable, you know, and especially when people aren't alone is the main thing. And it's easy to say, oh, people shouldn't use, and it's easy to say all these things, and that kind of attitude, I think, is what has led us to where we are today. You know, in the U.S. where I live, there's over 100,000 deaths a year. It's just shameful, and they're just starting now to kind of wake up to the fact that they need to apply some of these strategies, and we have the first, you know, overdose prevention site here in New York that just opened almost 2 years ago now, and yeah, so I think it's like it's sadly a slow response because of, I think, a lot of deeply entrenched misinformation about, you know, this issue, and people have a lot of feelings about it, you know, and there's a lot of theories, and I think that people see, you know, they don't really appreciate other folks' experiences, especially you know, folks that have lived some of the lives that they have from the downtown east side, you know, they come from all different sorts of, you know, insane experiences that few of us, I think, could ever imagine. And we think because we have had an aunt that, you know, went to an AA meeting and was able to get abstinent, that should apply to everyone else. And I think that that's, very poor-sighted, and we need to just respect that everyone comes from a different place, and that everyone's past different, and that regardless, everyone deserves an opportunity to be alive. And I think that's what these spaces do. And beyond that, you know, beyond, for me, what, you know, what was important about making this film is that, beyond that, when you create a space that people that are usually not welcome in many places in society are allowed to come in and not feel judged, beautiful things happen, and beautiful things in that person's life happens. And most importantly, they're able to build relationships and trust with folks that that gives them a place to turn to when they need it, you know.
I'd like to talk a little bit more about the actual film now. Can you sort of give us a brief overview, maybe a quick synopsis? I don't want to give too much away, of course. I encourage people to go see the film, but you know, basically, what does the film chronicle?
Film just basically takes us inside the space inside the Overdose Prevention Society, and it's filmed completely observational. So there's no interviews or anything, and you know, as I was filming, I'd worked at Insight and I'd worked in these spaces before. And so that's what I was hoping to capture, because there's a lot of misunderstanding and strong feelings towards these kind of services. So I wanted to give people, you know, a chance to kind of walk along the journey of these frontline workers. And so a lot of the, you know, we follow Sarah, we follow Ronnie, who's a manager there at the time, and a lot of people, you know, that are active and former drug users that work at this place. It really, you know, just is a day in the life and inside of what it's like to be on the front lines and in what is, you know, fairly known globally as ground zero of this crisis there in the downtown east side. It's where fentanyl, I think, really took over the drug supply the quickest and the hardest, and it's where I think was very visually seeing the cost of that. So yeah, I think we see like Ronnie's character as he struggles with burnout. We see Sarah, she's, you know, trying to you know, keep the doors open and get the message outside of the neighborhood of what this crisis is really like for those living inside it, and kind of get people on board to really make some drastic changes. We see Trey, who's an artist, and there's a bit of Smokey D in there, who's well known in the neighborhood, you know, and trying to spread the message through graffiti and painting walls about what's going on in the neighborhood. And we see a guy named Dana, who's a real intelligent sweetheart, who is also active injection drug user, and he is saving lives and also struggling with his own addiction, and he goes to treatment. But as we know with a lot of this stuff, that it's not always just a one time we got to go to treatment and everything's fine. It's a complicated issue, and so he struggles trying to come off fentanyl. It's also that much, you know, heroin was hard enough to come off of, or the withdrawals were hard enough to deal with heroin, let alone fentanyl. It's that much more stronger and tougher on people. So we see that with Dana, and we see an amazing woman named Norma, who's like, one of the sweetest souls I've had the honor of meeting in my life. I've known her for many years, and she really just cares about the Downtown East Side. She's an indigenous elder who was able to stop using heroin. She still, you know, drinks and smokes crack, but is an active drug user. But she is, you know, one of the kindest people I've ever met, and she cooks meals for the staff there, and just really works at trying to build that community in that place that makes it so special.
I feel like I should probably mention that a lot of these names you've mentioned are pretty well known to us down here at Co-op Radio, because, of course, OPS does produce and host their own radio show here on Co-op Radio, which is on Monday evenings, just so we know.
I've been to a few of those.
Yes.
It gets pretty rowdy in there.
Yes, I've heard the show a few times. It's pretty lively. Getting back to the film, I mentioned at the top that it actually made its debut a year ago. I know there have been a lot of screenings of the film over the past year, and plus one coming up in a couple of weeks in June, which we'll get to shortly. But I'm wondering, what sort of a response have you heard from audiences to the film? Are they generally receptive?
Yeah, it's been an amazing journey, I think, for all of us, you know, that we're a part of this film. And it really has been, for me, I have made videos. I made videos in the Downtown East Side for many years, just for, people that were trying to raise awareness about certain, you know, issues or stuff like that. But kind of educational videos trying to, help people understand these sorts of services and harm reduction in general, and really never, broke out of the harm reduction bubble. And so a lot of those videos, are kind of smaller audiences and stuff. And PBS was a funder of this film, and it really gave this a huge boost to be able to kind of bring this to U.S. audiences. So like the broadcast night, we had over, 1.3 million viewers, and we've done like hundreds of screenings across the U.S. in places that, in the U.S. it's like there's a lot of issues with these services, and a lot of people are trying to wrap their heads around it, but also a lot of grief because there's been so much loss, because of this crisis, and people are really open to these ideas, and I think really starting to admit that the war on drugs is, a disaster, and it's failed miserably, and it's time to start looking at other options, and that, this issue is more complicated, I think, than people want to give it credit for, and that's the same as what people need. It's complicated, and everyone has these different paths. And so, yeah, I mean, we've screened in Texas, in South Carolina and Florida and all across the U.S. And it's just been mind blowing to hear the responses and the openness to
to these ideas. I was pretty worried about that because I think this film doesn't try and pretty things up. It doesn't try, you know, and explain anything. It just really takes audiences pretty, and it's a gritty film, you know, and it gets really close and past people's comfort zones into what it's really like in the neighborhood, I think. And I didn't know how. I think there's a lot of the downtown east side requires a lot of context, you know. I know opposition to harm reduction is always like points to the downtown east side and say, oh, look at what, you know, the cause of this, look at what it does to this neighborhood and all this kind of like poverty, fear mongering and stuff like that. Whereas the downtown east side has got a long history and a lot of complex issues and is also like, you know, one of the most amazing places I think I've had the honor of ever being a part of. But people have to really, it's tough to explain that. It's tough to give people that haven't been a part of the community that understanding. And so I was really worried how that would translate. To me, it was such a relief and such a gratifying feeling. And it's been over and over again, just hearing the responses. And also, you know, this sort of work, people on the front lines doing this work, they don't get acknowledged a lot, I think. And especially in the US, this work is done in the shadows, you know, because it's so controversial, that no one really understands the heroism and the courage that is going on a daily basis on the front lines of this crisis. And people, I think, really felt like this could really point to it. You know, there's not a lot of films that really capture that out there. And so I think it was really appreciated on that level that people felt acknowledged and they felt like they could really point to it as an example of something they were proud of and the work that they were proud of. And that really meant a lot. I think, like, honestly, the best feeling, though, and the most important one was the premiere, like in being able to premiere at SFU there in the downtown east side with the community was, you know, it was my most, I was so really nervous about that because it's, you know, it's a vulnerable space and there's the last thing you want to do with a film in this community, you know, is cause any harm. And that you want, I was hoping that people really felt like it captured it as honestly as I could do and that people felt seen and acknowledged. And I felt like that really, it really was appreciated there when we premiered at Doxa. So that was like the most special for me, but it's just blown my mind, the journey it's been on and the audiences and people it's been able to reach. Super special and amazing to be able to get like the Norma and Dana to be able to travel around and talk to audiences around Canada. And Ronnie and Sarah have done a few trips to the US as well. So that's been really cool.
Well, thinking of talking to, let me start that one again. Thinking of talking to audiences, I know coming up on Wednesday, June the 14th, there's going to be a screening of Love in the Time of Fentanyl at the Cinematheque, the beloved art house film, part of their Frames of Mind series. The Cinematheque, of course, is at 1131 Howe Street between Helmkin and Davie. And I forgot to write down what time of the evening, but I know you can get the details at thecinematheque.ca. And I guess being based in New York, you're not going to be able to come out for the screening, but I do know that there is going to be a question and answer session after the film, at least with Sarah Blythe from the Overdose Prevention Society. Is that right?
Yeah, and I think Amy's going to join her as well. Amy's in the film as well, and she's I think she's the manager. Her and Trey are the managers there now, and an amazing person. And Sarah's obviously amazing. So, yeah, if you can come out and check it out, Cinematheque's an amazing theater. So, if you haven't had the chance, I don't think there's going to be too many in theater screenings in Vancouver. So, this may be the last chance for a while.
So what's one last quick question before we run out of time? What's next for the film? You mentioned not so many more screenings. Is it going to be available online at some point, or home video, or do you have...
Yeah, so it's the... Yeah, we're learning this kind of complicated distribution world, and it's, so it's PBS funded it, and it's been out on PBS for a while now, but that's only in the U.S., and so we have to figure out how to get it to Canadian audiences. If you check out, like, loveinthetimeoffentanyl.com and reach out there, we're always happy to kind of point people in the directions of where they can see it if you aren't able to get out to the theater. We'll hopefully have it available and on some level in Canada soon.
Well, it's been a tremendous pleasure to talk with you today, Colin. Thanks very much for joining us here on Co-op Radio's The Pulse.
Thanks so much for having me, James.
That was Colin Lasky, the director of Love in the Time of Fentanyl. The documentary will be screened at the Cinematheque on Wednesday, June 14th at 7 p.m. as part of the Cinematheque's Frames of Mind series. You can see more information and get advance tickets for the show at thecinematheque.ca. CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.